All right, ready to dive into ancient Israel. We've got power struggles, divine intervention, and some seriously intense friendships all rolled into one.
It's a story that's got it all, yeah.
We're talking about the rise of David and how King Saul, a little jealous.
Yeah, a little jealous is an understatement. It's a real-life drama. Like, the consequences of this story is shaped an entire nation. It's incredible.
It really is. And our main source today is a lecture by Dr. Robert Chisholm.
Oh, he's great.
Oh, he digs deep into the books of 1 and 2 Samuel. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating stuff. You know, what's interesting to me is that it's not just some ancient king being jealous. Mm-hmm. It's about how quickly public opinion can shift.
Yeah.
And what happens when human ambition bumps up against, divine will.
Yeah, that's the core of it. We see Saul, who's chosen by God, but ultimately he fails. And then you've got David, who seems like an ordinary shepherd, but he's actually destined for something extraordinary.
Right. So, okay, let's start with the whole David and Goliath thing. Okay. You know, the classic underdog story. Shepherd takes down a giant warrior with just a sling and a stone.
Classic.
But what's really interesting isn't just the victory, it's the aftermath.
Right. I mean, he becomes a celebrity overnight. You have to think about it. In that society, strength and military skill, that was everything. And then David, this young shepherd, he suddenly represents courage and hope for everyone. All the soldiers praise him. The people admire him. And there are even songs about his victory.
And those songs, those are where things get really interesting. So the women of Israel, they're singing, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands.
Oof.
And, I mean, come on, that's got to sting a little for Saul, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially because Saul was basically paralyzed with fear when he was facing Goliath.
Exactly.
You know, this really shows how public opinion shifted. Suddenly, Saul, the king, the guy in charge, he looks inadequate. He looks weak compared to this brave shepherd. And what's so fascinating is that, you know, Dr. Chisholm points out that David had only killed one Philistine at this point.
So it's almost like a prophecy.
Yeah. It's like they're predicting David's greatness.
Yeah. But it makes you wonder, did that song play a role in Saul's jealousy? Was it just, you know, people expressing their admiration, or was there something more going on?
That's a great question. It's hard to say for sure, but you can definitely see how those words, even if they weren't meant to be hurtful, could fuel some insecurity in someone who's already in a position of power.
Yeah, especially when that person, like Saul, is already dealing with what Dr. Chisholm calls an evil spirit from God.
Right, right.
What does that even mean? I mean, for those of us who aren't, you know, super familiar with biblical language.
Yeah, it's a tricky concept. It's basically a way of describing a kind of torment, a kind of psychological distress, but attributed to, like, a spiritual source. Hmm. And for Saul, this leads him to act erratically, almost impulsively, and eventually it leads to violence.
So it's like this inner turmoil that's driving his actions. Makes him paranoid, makes him suspicious, especially of David. And it's not just like a little bit of envy here. Saul becomes completely obsessed with getting rid of David. He even resorts to like some pretty shady tactics.
Oh, yeah. He tries everything. Like he throws spears at David, tries to use his own daughters as bait to get David killed by the Philistine. Sends assassins to David's house. I mean, it really paints a picture of a man who is just completely spiraling out of control.
Yeah. It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
And it's ironic. Saul tries to use the Philistines to get rid of David. But what happens? David goes and kills 200 Philistines to win Michal's hand in marriage.
Yeah, and he presents Saul with, like, double the bride price that Saul asked for, 200 Philistine foreskins.
That's a pretty powerful image.
It is, and it shows how David's influence and his military skill are growing while Saul is getting more and more desperate.
Hold on. We have to talk with Jonathan for a second. Mm-hmm. He's Saul's son, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, he's right in the middle of all this drama. Dr. Chisholm calls him a foil to Saul. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So a foil is like a literary device. It means you have one character who's presented as the opposite of another character. It's to highlight their differences. And in this case, Jonathan represents everything that Saul isn't. He's loyal, he's selfless, and he understands what God's plan is for David. He even makes a covenant with David. It's like he's acknowledging that David will be king someday, even if it means he's giving up his own chance at the throne.
It's pretty incredible. He's putting his friend above his own ambition.
It is.
And he doesn't just passively support David. He actively protects him. He warns David about what Saul's planning. He speaks well of David to his father. He tries to, like, calm things down.
It takes a lot of courage to do that. It shows that he really understands God's will, and he's willing to, like, align himself with it, even if it means going against his own family.
So it really makes you think, if Jonathan could see what was going on, why couldn't Saul?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? It's all about the struggle between recognizing and resisting what God wants.
And that struggle, it really comes to a head when God actually steps in, directly intervenes.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Chisholm, he keeps using this phrase, "The Lord was with David, but he had departed from Saul." It's like a constant reminder of, you know, who's really in control here.
Yeah, it's not just about David's skill or luck. There's a definite sense that God is actively protecting him from Saul's schemes. He dodges spears. He wins battles against crazy odds. He gets warnings from Jonathan and Michal.
I mean, there's even this scene where Saul sends guys to capture David, and they get overcome by the Spirit of God, and they start prophesying instead.
It's wild.
Can you imagine, like, being sent to arrest someone, and suddenly you're compelled to speak for God?
I mean, it's a pretty dramatic way for God to show that even with all this chaos, all this human conflict, he's still working things out according to his plan.
And this brings us to a really interesting point that Dr. Chisholm makes. He calls these chapters an apology for David.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So what's he getting at there?
So he's not saying David's perfect, you know, like, excusing him for any wrongdoing. He's suggesting that these chapters are meant to, like, defend David's claim to the throne. They're showing how Saul's actions, driven by jealousy and that, you know, evil spirit, they prove that he's not fit to be king anymore.
So it's less about David being perfect and more about emphasizing how far Saul has fallen.
Exactly. And remember, these stories were written for a specific audience, people who might have questioned David's right to be king. By showing how messed up Saul is and how God's protecting David, the story's reinforcing the idea that David should be king and preparing the audience for what's coming next.
Okay, this is getting good. I'm hooked.
Buckle up, because David's journey is about to take another wild turn. He ends up going to Samuel, you know, the prophet who anointed Saul as king in the first place.
Oh, it's got to be tense. So what happens next?
Well, that's where things get even more interesting, but we'll have to dive into that in the next part of our deep dive.
So last time we left David seeking refuge with Samuel, you know, the prophet who actually anointed Saul as king in the first place.
Yeah, it's definitely a strategic move by David, shows just how desperate his situation's become. You know, he's on the run, exhausted, and needs someone he can trust.
And Samuel, well, he's a prophet, so he has that direct connection with God, right? It's almost like David's appealing to a higher power. Saying, look, even the prophet who chose Saul can see that God's favoring me now.
It's a powerful statement for sure. And it really reinforces that theme of divine intervention we keep seeing throughout the story.
But Saul, he's not giving up that easily. He's still fixated on capturing David and sends his men to Ramah, where David and Samuel are.
And here's where things get really strange. Remember that evil spirit from God that's been tormenting Saul? Well, it's almost like it becomes contagious. Three times Saul sends soldiers to get David, and every single time they're overcome by the Spirit of God and end up prophesying instead of arresting him.
So God is putting up this supernatural shield around David, using Saul's own men to protect him. It's almost funny if it weren't so serious. Can you imagine Saul's frustration? Sending your best soldiers to capture someone, and they come back speaking in tongues.
Oh, it must have been incredibly frustrating for him. It really shows his state of mind. Saul is so consumed by jealousy and rage that he's completely lost sight of what's truly happening, unable to see God's hand in all of this.
And it gets even crazier when Saul himself goes to Ramah.
Right. He goes there to capture David, but he too is overtaken by the Spirit of God. He even strips off his clothes and starts prophesying. Dr. Chisholm points out the irony here, you know, because Samuel wasn't supposed to see Saul again officially after their last encounter.
Wait, so is that a contradiction then?
Dr. Chisholm argues that it's not a contradiction, just a different kind of encounter. He says the earlier statement about Samuel not seeing Saul again referred to their official relationship ending as prophet and king. But this time, Saul's the one who initiates the meeting, not Samuel.
So it's almost like God orchestrated this meeting specifically to protect David. Even Saul's pursuit of David is being used to fulfill God's plan.
It is a very interesting interpretation. It suggests that even in our worst moments, when we're acting out of jealousy or anger, God can still use our actions for his purpose.
Wow, that's pretty mind-blowing.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got Saul prophesying and David safe. For now, But this chase can't go on forever. What happens next?
This is where Jonathan's loyalty to David truly shines. Knowing his father's intentions, he comes up with a secret signal to warn David about Saul's moods.
Clever. So what kind of signal are we talking about? Smoke signals? Carrier pigeons?
He uses arrows, tells David he'll shoot arrows near a specific stone. If the arrows land beyond the stone, it means David is in danger. If they land closer, it's safe.
Talk about next level friendship. So what happens when Jonathan shoots the arrows?
Well, they land beyond the stone, the signal David's been dreading. He knows he has to leave Ramah.
This is where they have their final meeting, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Chisholm described it as incredibly emotional.
It is. David is hiding near the stone and sees the signal. He knows he has to escape. He and Jonathan share a tearful hug, and Jonathan makes David promise to remember his family when he becomes king. It's a very poignant scene, and it hints at what's to come.
Yeah, it reminds us that even back then, these were real people, real emotions, dealing with tough situations and choices. Jonathan's basically choosing his friend over his own family.
It really underscores the tragic consequences of Saul's actions. He's driven away his own son and turned a potential ally, his successor even, into an enemy.
So David runs off into the wilderness, leaving Jonathan behind. Where does he go from there?
He's alone, desperate, on the run. And his next move is pretty unexpected.
Right, I'm all ears.
Right.
Me more. Last time, we left David on the run after saying goodbye to Jonathan. So where does he go? A fugitive trying to escape a jealous king, you'd never guess.
He ends up in Nob. A city of priests. Risky move considering Saul's power. But David needs food shelter, maybe some divine guidance.
Putting his faith in the priesthood, hoping they'll protect him.
Exactly. He goes to Ahimelech, the high priest, and this is where things get kind of morally murky. Remember, David's a warrior, a strategist. He's not above being a bit deceptive to survive.
Right.
He tells Ahimelech he's on a secret mission from Saul. Needs supplies urgently.
And Ahimelech believes him.
He does. Gives David food, even the consecrated bread that only priests were supposed to eat. And get this, he also gives David Goliath's sword, that symbol of David's victory, now a tool for survival.
Wow, that's a huge gamble for Ahimelech trusting someone he thinks is loyal to Saul.
It is, and a decision with terrible consequences. Remember Doeg, Saul's Edomite servant? He sees all this and reports it back to Saul.
Oh no, with Saul already so paranoid, this can't be good.
It isn't. Saul is furious. He's convinced Ahimelech is plotting against him, orders the execution of Ahimelech and every priest in Nob.
That's awful. 80 priests dead because of David's lie. Really shows how far gone Saul is. He's lost it completely. No sense of justice anymore.
And it puts David in a terrible spot. He's responsible for the deaths of those priests, a consequence of his actions, even though he never wanted this to happen.
So where does he go now? He must know he's a bigger target than ever.
His next move is almost unbelievable. He goes to Gath, the Philistine city, Goliath's hometown. It's like walking straight into the lion's den.
That's crazy dangerous.
Yeah.
What's he thinking? He can't just blend in there.
He pretends to be insane, trying to avoid capture, a desperate, last-ditch effort to survive.
So does it work?
For a little while, Achish, the king of Gath, falls for it, sees David as harmless. But some Philistine courtiers recognize him. They remember him from his past victories.
Another close call. David's living on the edge. Everywhere he turns, there's danger.
It shows how resourceful he is. He escapes Gath before they figure him out. But it proves that even the best plans don't always keep you safe.
So where does he find shelter after Gath?
He ends up in the cave of Adullam. Not exactly a palace, but it offers some safety, a chance to regroup. And here's where things change. David, the lone fugitive, starts attracting followers.
This is where his army begins, right?
Exactly. People who are outcast, in debt, or unhappy with Saul, they see David as a potential leader.
So it's not just survival now. David's becoming a symbol of hope for those who feel left out or mistreated. He's building his own power, challenging Saul's rule.
It's a big turning point. David's not just reacting to Saul anymore. He's building his own following, establishing himself as a leader.
So what's the takeaway from all this? We've seen David go from shepherd to hero to fugitive, even causing the deaths of priests, however unintentionally. And Saul is spiraling into tyranny.
It's a story about the complex relationship between the choices we make and God's plan. We see David using his skills, his cunning, even deception to stay alive. But we also see God working behind the scenes, guiding events, setting the stage for David to become king.
It reminds us that the path to greatness isn't always easy or straightforward. It often means facing difficult choices with unexpected consequences.
Right. And as we learn more about David, we'll see how he handles these challenges, how he balances his flaws with his divine purpose, and ultimately how he becomes king, as God promised.
This has been an incredible deep dive. From facing Goliath to running for his life and gathering supporters in a cave, David's early journey is full of drama and moral complexity. What stands out to you most?
For me, it's this constant theme of recognizing and responding to God's will. We see Saul struggling with it, rejecting God's plan and facing the consequences. And then there's David, imperfect, sometimes making questionable choices, but always striving to align himself with God's purpose.
It's a good reminder that even when we mess up, when things seem uncertain, God is there to guide us. We just have to be willing to listen and trust his plan.
As you delve further into the story, think about this. How does David's idea of leadership change as he goes from being hunted to being king? Does he learn from Saul's mistakes, or does power corrupt him too? It's a question that still resonates with us today.
That's definitely something to consider. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of David and Saul. Until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep searching for those deeper truths hidden in these ancient stories.